This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Oral cancer accounts for between 2 and 4% of all cancers in the United States. Over 40,000 people will be diagnosed with oral cancer annually, and almost 8,000 will die of it. But how do you know if you're at risk for this deadly disease? Well, here with the answer is Dr. Terrence Thines. He's professor and chief of service in the Division of Dentistry at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Thines.
Thank you very much.
So, oral cancers take lives each year, but what do we actually mean when we say oral cancer?
Oral cancer is any type of cancer that occurs from the lips back to the back of the throat, the oropharynx. We all know about squamous cell carcinoma, melanoma, adenoma, sarcomas. There really are many types of oral cancer. And that's why a program like this is so important, that we can focus on some of the less common forms of oral cancer and bring people's awareness to the forefront so they can get early treatment.
So I understand that the rate of oropharyngeal cancer, which is what you're talking about here, has changed over time. Tell us about that.
Yes, over the last 30 years, the rate really has declined significantly, and this is due to better diagnosis, early detection, self-examination, people receiving routine dental care, focus on preventive strategies like diet, limiting exposure to carcinogens like tobacco, various forms, cigarette, chewing tobacco, pipes, and that type of thing, as well as sun exposures.
So the death rate has been decreasing, but there's been a recent rise in cases. And I think we've done a show on this once before. Tell us about this recent rise. What is it and why is it happening?
Well, unfortunately, we don't really know what causes cancer in every situation, but people have probably heard of the HPV virus, the human papilloma virus.
Right.
And there seems to be an increase in the number of cases and a little bit change in the profile of patient that gets oral cancer related to HPV. But it's early in the observation of these patients, and we really don't know a lot about what's happening, other than the fact it's very similar to the other forms of oral cancer that people get a little bit later in life. It's treated the same way. It just seems HPV probably starts the process a little bit earlier.
So who are the people who are most at risk for any types of oral cancer?
At present time, we think the people most at risk are those with risk factors, as far as smoking, tobacco, poor dietary habits, poor oral hygiene, alcohol consumption, that type of thing.
Does the risk increase with age, though?
Well, from a statistical standpoint, we see the most cases right now, excluding the HPV-associated cases, in the fifth and sixth decades of life.
So it is much later in life.
Yes.
How about things like sun exposure? I mean, obviously, that's true in the outer layers of our skin.
Mm-hmm.
But how about in the mouth?
Well, not really the mouth per se, but we will see the effect of actinic keratosis or sun exposure on the lips itself.
And you mentioned that the part of the reason for the decrease in the incidence of oral cancer has been a change in lifestyle, or maybe an awareness of both important oral care, but also diet. So what role does diet play? Do we know exactly or how it's affecting
us? Well, that's another thing that we don't exactly know what really is happening relative to diet, but people who do pay closer attention to good, healthy dietary habits do seem to benefit from that.
So again, some of the other issues like obesity or poor diet leading to something like obesity could be a contributing factor to something
right.
like oral cancer.
Right, we call that a cofactor, but we don't really know what the exact role is.
Getting back to the HPV virus, though, is this when you talk about a younger population being exposed or being more likely to contract it, is that because of engaging in things like oral sex?
Well, it's appealing to say that, but the studies that have been up to this point in time really don't identify an exact cause. And intuitively, one would think it's logical, but from a scientific standpoint, we don't really want to say that yet.
So it's co-occurring.
Correct.
But we don't exactly know if it's causal.
Right.
I see. So what's bottom line prognosis if you should get oral cancer? I mean, I mentioned here that up to as many as 8,000 people may die of it each year. So what's the prognosis in general?
The earlier cancer is caught, the more likely we are to effect a cure. And there are several treatment modalities that we'll mention in a minute. If you do have cancer that actually spreads to the local tissues, to the lymph nodes and other parts of the body,
beyond the oral cavity,
mm-hmm. the 5-year survival rate is about 60% now. Mm-hmm. And it used to be less than 50% up to 10 years ago.
Wow.
So the prognosis is good for people who are detected and receive treatment early.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Terrence Thines, and we are talking about oral pharyngeal cancers, what they are, and what are the potential treatments and consequences of them. So you can say success with early diagnosis, 5-year survival is up to 60%, but the treatment in many cases, especially the surgical treatment, can be quite disfiguring, can't it?
It can be, and that's one of the reasons why we promote early detection, because the earlier it's caught, the less invasive it is and may just need to excise or take out a small piece of tissue rather than a large involved piece of tissue.
Go ahead.
I think we've all seen people in public or even certain media people like Roger Ebert, who had head and neck cancer, and he continued his career as he was progressing through. And it really is quite disfiguring, but that shows you that people are a little bit more receptive to going out and confronting the issues that they have. In the past, people probably would have relegated themselves to their house and not done anything. But nowadays, with successful treatment and acceptance of the public, I think people lead a more normal life.
Getting to treatment then, so what exactly, I want to get also to a diagnosis as well, but when you talk about treatment, let's say once you've established there is an oral cancer, What are the modalities that are used?
Well, the important thing is to diagnose the specific type of cancer. Cancer is just abnormal growth of cells, and it can be just on the surface or underneath the surface. It can be glandular tissue, melanoma, pigment-producing cells. So we need to know exactly what type of cancer we're dealing with.
The cell type.
And then based on the cell type and the size of the cancer, you'll probably experience surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation therapy, or a combination of all three. And that really is another thing that has contributed to the success is advanced treatment modalities over the last 10 years.
So I'm curious about one thing. When we talk about the disfigurement aspect, which largely probably comes mostly from the surgical intervention, have they developed prostheses or things that can help perhaps allay some of that extreme disfigurement?
Absolutely.
In other words, if a jaw is removed, can
right.
can they replace it with some prosthetics?
Yeah, it requires a comprehensive treatment plan and coordination between the surgeon, the radiation oncologist, or chemotherapy, and probably in many situations, a maxillofacial prosthodontist, which is a specialty of dentistry. And there actually are a couple in the Syracuse area who are involved with that type of therapy. But yes, and the advances that have taken place over the last couple of decades have been phenomenal relative to how aesthetic or good-looking some of these prostheses are.
So you are involved, I mean, all of this that we're talking about, this oropharyngeal cancer falls within the general category of head and neck cancers. And the new cancer center is going to be addressing these in somewhat of a multidisciplinary fashion. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. This is a really exciting happening in central New York. The cancer center by itself is a tremendous resource for the population. But we do have a head and neck group that will be meeting and having a multidisciplinary approach to patient evaluation, management, and treatment after the fact.
So all of these specialists that you've just alluded to can weigh in and participate in the care of
Absolutely.
A patient.
Absolutely, yep.
So how do you know, let's get back to the individual person, how do you know if you might have this oral cancer, and what should you be doing to make sure you don't?
There are a couple of things. Number one, being a dentist, I have to promote visiting your dentist routinely, because dentists, even though you may not realize he or she is performing an oral cancer exam, frequently will look at all of the tissues to make sure they're normal. And the other thing that we are promoting is doing a self-exam similar to a breast or testicular examination. It, the mouth is very accessible for anybody to look in the bathroom mirror and just study different surfaces to make sure they look normal.
So what should you be looking for? I mean, what are the signs and symptoms that you should be out on the lookout for?
Well, this is also another insidious thing I should mention. Oral cancer frequently starts as a painless lesion. So early detection is critically important. And if you're doing the self-examination, you want to look for any lumps or bumps, red or white spots, pigmented lesions, anything that looks a little abnormal. And if it's there longer than 2 weeks, it's important to seek professional care, either through your physician, dentist, head and neck surgeon, or somebody like that.
I also saw that you had mentioned in some of the things that you provided for me prior to this interview, that things, even things like hoarseness or difficulty chewing or swallowing, difficulty moving your jaw or tongue, anything?
Absolutely. Anything unusual or abnormal might be associated with any disease condition. It doesn't necessarily have to be cancer, but if it's affecting your life and if it lasts longer than 2 weeks, then it requires professional evaluation.
And where would you go? First to a dentist?
Well, I think it probably depends on the individual. The dentist obviously is a logical source, but physician might be another access to care. If the physician felt a referral to ear, nose, and throat or head and neck surgeon is appropriate, he or she would make that referral for the patient.
So when you're getting back to self-examination, are you just opening your mouth and looking at your tongue and your lips, or are you actually looking perhaps in your inside of your cheek? I mean, help us understand.
To do a good job, you want to make sure you're standing in front of a mirror and open your mouth, have a piece of gauze, pull your tongue out, look at the back on the sides, because the tongue is the most common site for oral cancer, and the back of the throat is the next most common, so you want to check those. But as you know, the lip or the cheeks actually hide tissues up underneath the ridge where the teeth are held, and you have to pull the cheek back to look at all of those tissues. And it's a good idea to get in the habit of doing it so you know what your mouth looks like when it's normal. So if there's something that's painless and abnormal, you will be able to identify it and get the care you need.
It's also important, from what you've been saying, and to underscore how important regular dental checkups are.
Absolutely.
And what do you recommend? What's the general recommendation for people?
I think
very little time we have.
Generally accepted sequence is twice a year. But there are some people, based on their oral hygiene or their inability to do a good job, maybe every 3 or 4 months. It should be customized and individualized to the specific situation for each patient.
And how often for things like dental cleanings?
Once again, it can be individualized. The generally accepted standard is twice a year, every 6 months, but some people need it more frequently based on their oral chemistry.
So overall, what we're really saying is you can avoid oral cancer, or you can at least help yourself in every way if you are vigilant about your oral health.
Absolutely. Early detection is critically important.
I want to thank you for coming in. My guest has been Dr. Terrence Thines. He's professor and chief of the service in the Division of Dentistry at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks, Dr. Thines.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.